verse 20 and a couple of times in chapter 10. I'll give you the definition. I'll give you the word, and I'll give you the definition of the word. The Hebrew word is the word tzadek, which is spelled T-S-A-D-H-E-Q. But wouldn't you love to get that in Scrabble? I mean, that's a big word. Tzadek. I looked it up in a bunch of my Hebrew word study resources, but here, and I tried to distill the definitions and a grab handle kind of definition that was easy to remember. Here's what it means. It means to be proven right by forensic means. You know what the word forensic means? I didn't. I had to look it up. I knew it had something to do with the television program. Forensic means to win an argument by offering evidence that creates proof. And usually it's used in a court of law. So to be proven right by forensic means that you are able to present evidence. There's one English word that fits really well, and it's the word justified. But it's a strong word. It means that you are able to step forward and present evidence that justifies your case or that proves that you're innocent. And that's a pivotal word in here, and it's critical because a couple of times legal terms are used in here because Job is answering the legal argument that Bildad gave and said, look, you've been accusing God of being unjust by not admitting that you really are a sinner and you're lying about it. And so Job uses some legal terms, but this is an important one. How can a man be proven right by proof of evidence? Tzedek. How can a man be justified before God? If one wished to contend with him, he couldn't answer him one time out of a thousand. That word contend is an interesting word too. It means to take somebody to court. So what he's saying, look, how in the world could I ever prove before God that I'm totally right by presenting evidence? I couldn't even get him in to court. And if I did, he's so much smarter than I am, I couldn't answer one out of a thousand of his questions. God is wise in heart, verse 4, and mighty in strength. And who has ever hardened himself against him and prospered? Or who has ever successfully resisted God? He removes the mountains and they don't know when he overturns them in his anger. In other words, he comes along and he does whatever he wants to. Even mountains can't resist him. He shakes the earth out of its place and its pillars tremble. He commands the sun and it doesn't rise. And that what that is basically saying, and remember, this is Hebrew poetry, so it's hard to translate it into English. But what he's saying is, if God told the sun not to rise, the sun would not rise. This is the person I'm going to drag into court to, you know, to defend myself. And he seals off the stars. He alone spreads out the heavens and treads on the waves of the sea. He made the Bear, Orion, and the Pleiades. Those are the constellations. In the chambers of the south, he does great things past finding out. Yes, wonders without number. And yet, if he goes by me, I don't see him. If he moves past, I don't perceive him. Not only is he invincible, he's invisible. How do you drag such a person into court? And if he takes away, who can hinder him? Job, I think, is still clinging to the bedrock philosophy that he exhibited in chapter 1, where he has no sense of entitlement. This is a real problem we have in our culture, even with Christians. We think we deserve the blessings that we have. We think that actually we're responsible for the blessings that we have. It's my talent. It's my hard work. You know, I sweat and I earn this money. But remember, in Deuteronomy, he said, God told Israel before they went in the promised land, he said, don't ever forget, God is the one that gives you the ability to create wealth. God pulls your plug, you're dead in the water, buddy. So, but here you see Job not once ever having a sense of entitlement when he loses everything. Rather than complain, oh, my stuff, my family, he just said, look, God gave me everything and everybody that I have. He has a right to take them away. That's the same thing that he's saying here in verse 12. If he takes away, who can hinder him? How in the world could you stop him if he decided he wanted to take something away from you? Who can say to him, what are you doing? And I wrote in parentheses, well, lots of people have the brass to do that, but they don't know what they're dealing with. They don't know how arrogant that is. If God will not withdraw his anger, the allies of the proud lie prostrate beneath him. That word allies can also be translated witnesses or some people that you bring into court to as character references. And what Job is saying is, look, if God's decided he's going to be mad at me, it doesn't matter how many of witnesses I get on my behalf, I'm not going to be able to fight him. I find this interesting because there's at the root of this and all of Job's confusion and his pain, there's still humility. He still has a proper view of God. And, of course, God loved that, and God knew that Job wasn't going to lose that. And in a very short period of time, Job is going to be vindicated by God himself. How then can I answer him? And how can I choose my words to reason with him? For if I were, or though I were, and there's that word tzedek again, if I were able to justify myself, if I were able to prove by presenting evidence that I was right before God, I couldn't answer him. I would just beg mercy of my judge. In the Bob movie version of this, as much as Job is slammed and beaten around and confused and depressed in some places, every time he makes one of those kind of statements, you know, I am not going to accuse God of wrong. It looks like he's being really mean to me. But if I could stand up in court and prove that I was right, I wouldn't do it. I would beg for mercy. Every time I can just see his smile breaking out on our Heavenly Father's face, and I can see Satan going, nuts. Because he's absolutely so cynical, Satan is, about humans that he's convinced that, yeah, we're only in it for the blessing. If I called, I love this. This sounds very familiar. If I called right now, and this is a verb tense that speaks of, if right now I called out to God and he answered me, I wouldn't believe that he was listening to my voice. Has that ever happened to you where you're just, your faith is so weak? Have you said, oh God, I just need a miracle right now, and a miracle plopped down right in your hands, you'd just say, wow, what a coincidence. You couldn't connect the thought in your brain that, oh, God answered my prayer. I don't know if you've ever been so low in your faith that God had to, it reminds me of a story that we studied in the book of Acts, where God has to convince you, yes, I heard your prayer. Yes, I did answer it. But your faith was so weeny that you couldn't believe it. Does that sound like any story that we studied in the book of Acts? Like Peter being in jail and the whole church is praying, oh God, please set Peter free. Oh God, please set Peter free. So God just shakes the whole jail. Peter thinks it's a dream. Peter's sitting there and the angel goes, come on, let's get out of here. And he takes him out of town, and Peter runs to the place where they're having their secret prayer meeting, and he knocks on the door, and the servant girl comes to the door, and she looks through the peephole, and she sees Peter, and she's so freaked out, she doesn't even unlock the door. She just goes running, and Peter's standing out there freezing in the alley, and she goes running back in, and she goes, it's Peter. And they go, shh, we're praying. It's not Peter. It's just a ghost. Isn't that weird? This is the early church. This is the book of Acts. These are the guys with muscles. Isn't that the way we are sometimes? Now, to not fault these people, the last one of their numbers that got arrested was put to death. Isn't it natural to think, well, okay, I guess it's all over. What's the point of praying? Well, we might as well pray. I mean, who knows? Something about this makes me smile because I just said, oh, Joe, buddy, you're doing great. God hasn't explained anything. I've got the book of Job to look at. Job didn't have the book of Job to look at. I mean, he had no scriptures whatsoever. I have the cross to look at. I should never, ever, once for the rest of my life, ever doubt God's love. All I have to do is look at history. But sometimes our faith is so weak that we're just like Job. We're so discouraged, we just say, you know, right now, if I called out to him and he answered me, I wouldn't even believe it that he was listening. I'm so crushed. He crushes me with a tempest. By the way, all of these things that he's saying, they're not true. About God being the one crushing him, we know it was not God. It was the enemy. By the way, there's no evidence that Job really thought all of this was directly caused by God until his friends started saying so. Job would have never thought that this is all happening to me because I'm a rotten, wicked sinner, because he wasn't a rotten, wicked sinner. He didn't start thinking that and trying to defend himself against that and starting to wonder whether God was really actually paying attention until his friends said all the stuff that they said. And that's sobering, I think. I sure don't want to be one of those kind of friends. He won't allow me to catch my breath, verse 18. He fills me with bitterness. That's a unique word in Hebrew which speaks of the bitterness that is caused by calamity. If it's a matter of strength, yeah, he's strong. And if it's a matter of justice, remember that was the big deal that Bildad was talking about, God's justice. He says, okay, well, who's going to appoint my day in court? Though I were righteous, here's that word tzedek again, though I were justified or proved my righteousness, my own mouth would condemn me. Couldn't trust my words. If I did get God into court and I had, you know, my opportunity, okay, I could be my own defense attorney, okay, stand up, and he says, I couldn't trust my own mouth. Been there. And though I were blameless, it would prove me perverse. What would prove him perverse? He said, even if I was innocent, if I tried to look God in the eyes and explain that I have been unjustly treated, that would be a wrong thing to do. You got to love this guy's heart, because people regularly, I've many times in my life accused God of things that were totally out of character for him. And he never did smite me, though I sure deserved it. He just knew I didn't understand, just like he knew Job didn't understand. And you know, Job in about 24 hours is going to feel totally differently. I am blameless, verse 21. And yet I don't know myself. I despise my life. The word know here is an important word. It's the Hebrew word which speaks of to know yourself completely and intimately. Here's another thing of humility. He says, look, I'm blameless. As far as I know, God and I have everything is settled between us. But he said, to be honest with you, I don't really know myself completely. There's humility as well. In verse 22, and it doesn't matter, there, it's all one thing, or there's no difference between whether I'm guilty or whether I'm innocent, because he destroys the blameless and the wicked. Is that true? Does God differentiate between the wicked and the blameless? Well, yes, he does, absolutely. So is this statement true? No, it's not true. He's saying, look, he treats the blameless just exactly the way he treats the wicked. That's not true. Jesus comes along and Jesus says, God sends his rain of blessing on the just and on the unjust. What kind of heart does God have? He blesses bad people and he blesses good people because that's his heart. So who is it that's destroying the blameless Job? Well, it's not God at all. Don't you just want God to say, excuse me, you don't understand. Don't you just want God to speak up right now? Well, get used to that because there's going to be about 20 more chapters. We're going to want him to see it. But once again, that covers a very short period of time chronologically, but it still bugs me that God's keeping his mouth shut. Once again, if God explained every time when I wanted him to, I would miss the good stuff. I would miss the muscles. If God just thoroughly explained, I remember him speaking to my heart one time and saying, Bob, we're going to have a problem. If the only way, son, that you are going to have peace is if you understand everything, you are going to have a rocky ride. If you're willing to let me give you peace right now, simply by not insisting on understanding and just trusting me, you can have peace right now. And eventually you'll see you didn't need to understand when you thought you did. But man, I see this and I just want God to speak up. Well, God will speak up. He has his reasons for being quiet. He always does. Verse 23, if the scourge slays suddenly, he laughs at the plight of the innocent. Is that true? Well, no, it's not. The earth is given into the hand of the wicked, and he covers the faces of its judges. Boy, doesn't it feel like that sometimes? Doesn't it just feel like, I have to admit, it is one of the reasons that I groan for Jesus to return. When I look at the world and how corrupt justice is, human justice, you can't trust anybody. Who can you trust? Well, I'll trust the Republicans. Good luck. They're humans. Well, I'll trust the independents. You know, they're humans too. Humans just stink. Don't you just want God to put this whole business out of its misery and set up a just judge? That's what Job is feeling. But follow this train of thought. He's been saying some pretty depressing, discouraged things along in here. In verse 24, he comes the closest so far to actually getting it. He says, if it is not he, who else could it be? Ooh. You know, when I read that, I want to just say, Job, come on, follow that thought through, buddy. Oops, sorry, dropped my notes. This is why they never make videos of me doing Bible studies. Job is just saying, you know, God doesn't care whether I'm righteous. He doesn't care whether you're innocent, the wicked, and everything is the same. There is no justice. And if it's not God doing this, who is it? Job, you're that close. Remember the tsunami word? You call it the tsunami word. It's one of the Greek words for understanding. It means to connect the dots, or to put, it's the word for putting jigsaw puzzle together. Put all the pieces together. Take everything, put it together till it makes sense. You look at Job and you're just thinking, Job. It isn't God. You're that close. There are other choices. Would he have thought any of these things had it not been for his friends coming and accusing him? Have you ever been accused of something just so horrible and so nasty that it broke your heart and you couldn't even defend yourself? I've been accused of stuff in my life that hurt me so bad I felt dirty. I knew it wasn't true. God knew it wasn't true. I was afraid to go outside. And I understand this feeling that Job has here. If it's not he, he's just so beaten down. who could it be? Don't you just want God to step right in, da 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 da, and just straighten this out? Well, hold that thought. It'll take a little while. Now my days are swifter than a runner. The King James Bible says they're swifter than a post. And I thought, whoa, there's a linguistic anomaly if I ever heard one. But it was speaking of post as being the letter carriers. And so the New King James translates it, you're swifter than a post. I've been called dumber than a post, but never. My days are swifter than a post. They flee away, and they see no good. They pass by like swift ships, like an eagle swooping on its prey. He's so depressed. If I say, I'll just forget my complaint. I'll put off my sad face, and I'll wear a smile. Don't worry, be happy. It's like Christian Science. When those guys wind up in hell, they're going to say, I'm not here, and it's not hot. Because, you know, whatever you confess, and it's those positive confession guys, if he's saying, if I just pretend I'm okay, that's even scarier. I'd be afraid of all my sufferings. And the verb tense here speaks of my sufferings yet to come. Whereas if I just, you know, suck it up and say I'm just going to put on a happy face instead of a sad face, that isn't going to fix anything. Who knows? It could get worse tomorrow. I know that you won't hold me innocent, he says to God, just because I put on a happy face. And if I really am condemned, if I really am guilty, why bother? What's the point? Why even try? Why labor in vain to defend myself? If I wash myself with snow water and cleanse, there's a neat name for a detergent, snow water. If I wash myself with snow water and cleanse my hands with soap, yet you will plunge me into the pit and my own clothes will hate me. Have you just felt so low and so dirty that your clothes hated you? You know, it's I can laugh about it, but I have been there in my life. The worst time of despair in my life, I truly believed that the world would be better off without me. I wasn't just feeling sorry for myself. I honestly believed that. I had listened to the lies for such a long period of time. It's interesting, and looking at that point in my life, of course, I had no idea that it wasn't going to always be that way. And God let me go through that whole cycle. And he intervened sort of like what he did in Job's life at a time when he could have really spared a lot of grief if he had just come and stepped in sooner. But part of the lesson, part of the muscles, part of the lesson, that's why we sang that song. I need to learn my lessons well. In his timing, he'll tell me. Some of the lessons are the lessons of perseverance and endurance. It's the trusting in the no matter whats of our lives. He is not a man like I am, that I may answer him. That word answer is used a bunch of times. That's speaking of cross-examination, you know, being examined by the prosecutor and then defending yourself. It's a legal term. God isn't somebody I could drag into court and answer to him, that we should go into court together, verse 32. Nor is there any mediator between us. Now that, depending which translation you have, once again, it's Hebrew poetry. So it could be read as a statement. It could be read as a cry, of an emotional cry of, and that's why I titled this study tonight, I Need a Lawyer, because that's what he's saying. It could also be a question in Hebrew. Is there anybody to mediate? Is there an attorney that would take my case before God? Is there any mediator between us who may lay his hand on us both? I just love that phrase. Is there somebody